Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin of SpikeEskin.com and Mike Levin of Liberty Ballers. How are you, sir?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm great. An apology to... I always, you know, it's funny when you do a podcast that it's almost... It's same and different as doing radio, but one of the things that's the same is that you don't have a... There's no audience that you can see. So sometimes you wonder if you're doing it for nobody. And I don't like not doing the podcast on the day that we're supposed to do the podcast, but when we don't do it and by 11 a.m. a few people are like, hey, why no podcast yet? That's like a nice reassuring feeling that people are disappointed that it's not done yet.
It's like the six of them really do care.
And I was also informed yesterday by a tweeter that we also have listeners in the UK now. So I think that brings the country count up to five. So I'm pretty excited about that too. Yeah, Sixers fans all over the globe. There's a French Sixers Twitter and a Sixers Twitter from Spain that I don't know if they know that I don't know their languages, because like when they ask me questions, they ask in their native language and I just take it to Google Translate and I respond in their language. I think they think I'm worldly. So
that's dedication.
Yeah, it sure is. There is a possibility that this podcast could be a little shorter than normally it is, I'll give you the choice whether we start out with NBA type stuff or Sixers type stuff right off the top.
Let's jump into Sixers.
Sixers right away. Okay.
People are here for the Sixers. Let's do Sixers.
Right, and I'll let and I had a couple of suggestions as to like stat guesses and rotation guesses, and I want to save that stuff for actual preseason stuff. It's easy in the middle of September when nothing's going on to sort of cheat and do that stuff, but then that will leave us with nothing to do then. So I figure, well, if the Sixers are doing insignificant things, we're going to talk about them. That's just, you're just going to have to, if you're interested enough to listen to this, then you're interested enough to hear about it. All right, player news. Who knows whether to believe it? I think we would all still guess that the Sixers at some point will add another guard. A guard that's played more than 6 minutes a game in the NBA at some point. And the three rumored names this week were one that had appeared before, one that but Booby had only appeared by me. So the fact that the Booby Gibson rumor was an actual thing was pretty exciting to me. Chris Duhon, which we had heard before, and Roddy Bubois, who was once like this untradeable commodity for the Mavs. And you remember that when he was like, he was supposed to be the future there. I mean, he was.
He was Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. That's a definitely a fair comparison. And then, and who knows, because we've talked before on the pod about how situations can sort of determine your future and your present, but injuries didn't help. And the fact that he's not quite as good as, you know, it's funny. A lot of times with guys like him, people will say, man, as soon as he develops a jump shot, ... And then if that never happens, then, you know, the career just ends up being those three dots. So he's been disappointing. Do you have if it's one of those three, do you have a choice?
Yeah, I mean, Bubois is the most athletic, and I'm pretty sure is the youngest by quite a few years. So if it has to be one of them, I'd like it to be him, but... You gotta think that at some point they're gonna sign someone that can shoot a basketball, and that would be Booby, and it'd be fun to say Booby as often as I like. Bubois would be a hinky hire. Gibson would be a Brett Brown begging him to just do something.
Please don't make me just camp Spencer Hawes out in the corner. Please, if that's what you're asking me to do, Sam, I'll do it. But that's sort of a beg there. Oddly, I think I prefer I would like it to be Gibson only because I think it would be funny that I wanted somebody named Booby and they got somebody named Booby.
Sure.
And he can shoot. He's the best shooter of the three. I think, and you can pan this, but of the available options, I think I might like Duhon the best only because, like, Duhon is not a starter, and, you know, when he was starting for the Lakers, it was terrible. But, like, when he's a 15-minute-a-game guy or 12, 15-minute-a-game guy, he's not that horrible. And it just, I feel like there should be somebody in the backcourt who has some sort of idea of how to play point guard in the NBA, just like somebody. And I feel like of these three options, Duhon is the best of the three.
He's definitely the most point guard of the three of them.
Yeah.
And if you want someone just to literally be a point guard, to be like a, you know, don't let the offense completely fall apart while you're in there, he's fine. It's fine. It's all fine. We're just walking on air. It's all good.
Sixers Spain suggested to me that if I wanted a three-point shooter, he'd rather have Cartier Martin because, A, he's a better three-point shooter, and then, B, we wouldn't have to see him beat us with a half-court shot at some point this year.
Yeah.
Which are both.
Cartier Martin's on the list of like, right in my prime of playing College Hoops 2K8 on Xbox 360. So Cartier Martin is, like, right. Like, Cartier Martin of Kansas State, like, oh, man, him and Billy Walker. Those were the days.
And I guess he is a free agent.
Personal affinity for Cartier Martin.
And he is a free agent, so.
He's a free agent because he's not very good.
Yeah, but he can, 39% from three last year, 38% the year before, 39% the year before. I mean, that's sort of. Yeah, I mean, that's 40% is, right, especially with a, you know, you're talking three and four shots a game. That's sort of elite level three-point shooter, so. And he's, you know, a swing guy, which the Sixers went from swing guy central to not having really any legitimate swing guys aside from Evan Turner. So
yeah.
I guess I wouldn't mind Cartier Martin to.
No,
I
love it. And a great name also.
Cartier. Can you imagine if we had a Cartier and a Booby? With the most normal name in history at head coach with Brett Brown. We have Brett Brown, Cartier, and Booby. One guy who you'll always identify by first and last name, and two guys you'll never hear their last name, Booby and Cartier.
And Nerlens.
And Nerlens, right. And then the other news was the Sixers supposed hire. This is another funny Sixers move in that they've hired this guy and not confirmed it yet. We're back to that era of 2 months ago of Sixers land, in that apparently they've hired Greg Foster, former NBA player, current UTEP assistant, to be an assistant coach, which is a nice little hire. I like, it's funny, the notion of hiring, you know, former players who were not that good, end up being better coaches and assistant coaches because they, I guess, sort of had to pay more attention to, you would guess, pay more attention to understanding those things. And not that star players don't work hard, but, like, you know, if you're not particularly talented, you have to understand the basics better. So
you got to fight more and get it all the time. I think it's interesting because Foster was at UTEP the year Mark Moultrie transferred to Mississippi State. I don't know what it means. But I think it is interesting still. Do you know what I mean? Are you interested at all in that or not even a little?
Could you explain to me why it's interesting, I guess? Is it more than coincidental?
I don't know. Well, maybe. That UTEP team was so awesome. It was Moultrie and Derek Character, who's a head case, and Randy Culpepper, who's like a small gunner of a point guard, and Julian Stone, who's actually made a career for himself. He plays in Denver for a bit. I think he still might be there. And Christian Polk, who was an ASU transfer. And, like, it was a really fun but completely chaotic team. But he was a good shot blocker. He was a blocker. I don't know where that's gone, but he was, like, really, really – he was, like, averaging, like, upwards of like 3 or 4, I believe, or at least every time I would check the box score, he would have like 7, and I got excited about him. So UTEP under Moultrie was very exciting to me, and then he sat out a year when he transferred to Mississippi State, and that was the year that Tim Floyd came into UTEP. I believe it's Tim Floyd. And then Tim Floyd brought along...
Oh, Tim Floyd, former... Wasn't he Bulls coach? Wasn't Floyd a... Am I thinking a different Tim Floyd? Hold on.
No, he's USC.
Oh, okay, right.
And then he brought along Foster with him. So, I don't know if it means that Moultrie has anything for him or if it's a coincidence, but I think there's, you know, something, maybe.
Tim Floyd did coach the Bulls from 08 to from 98 to 2001.
Yeah.
I thought, I knew he didn't just coach the Bulls, but that's where I remembered him from. If I get, we're gonna bring you in to get the most out of Arnett Moultrie. I mean, look, here's the thing about Moultrie is that he's looked mostly bad, but he did have, even at Mississippi State, he did have a good college career and was a pretty, a well thought of prospect. I mean, he was, you know, that year in the draft, he was thought of as like a top 15 guy. And
he wasn't.
He was.
The Sixers thought of him as a top 15 guy. Nobody else had him up there.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, it is. No. Nobody else has had him. That's why he dropped all the way to 27.
Well, guys drop all the time. It doesn't mean that they're not projected in the top 15.
He was only projected to the Sixers in the top 15. He wasn't projected anybody. It was just because the Sixers were so obvious about how much they liked him.
He was
a senior. He didn't play defense. I mean, you know, athletic and big, but he wasn't in top 15 prospects.
I don't think the Sixers were the only team projected to take Arnett Moultrie.
Yeah, I mean, someone could have reached on him, but there were 25 prospects that were more thought of than him. Not that the 15 and 25 is a huge difference.
Yeah,
but.
All right. But that said, like, you know, the whole year has been about acquiring guys who on some level are like Arnett Moultrie. About getting a guy who was picked in the first round who somebody thought had something and seeing if he has anything. So one would imagine that if Arnett Moultrie has anything, he'll be given a chance to show that this year. There won't be, you know, they will invest themselves in trying to find, and that's why they're hiring all of these guys who are all player development guys to find out which of these, you know, first round busts that they have, which is essentially a team full of first round busts so far. That's really what they have. You know,
I smell a name change.
What's that?
I smell a name change.
What, of the podcast or the team?
No, of the
the Philadelphia busts. On all different levels, you know, there's the Evan Turner top five bust to the.
Right.
But they've all, on some level, been guys who somebody thought had an NBA skill or at least a chance to develop an NBA skill that hasn't done it yet. And they're going to find out which of these guys has one of those skills. So I guess it is there's something to be said for bringing somebody in who was familiar with what was good about Arnett Moultrie at one point to see if that is transferable to the NBA. Arnett Moultrie, like to me, the scariest thing about him always was that his closest comp seemed like Maurice Spates. It seemed like his best offensive move was like a face-up jumper, and his defense was sort of questionable, and the rebounding, though it was sort of impressive in college, just watching him. And this is just, you know, anecdotal visual evidence, but didn't seem like a particularly strong rebounder when I watched him in the NBA. But
certainly not on the defensive end.
No. You wrote something, I don't even know how to talk about it because it seems like maybe the most sarcastic Mike Lavinie thing you've ever written on Liberty Ballers about the player development plot. But it seemed like, and if I'm reading it correctly, just a shot at anyone who questioned what the Sixers were doing, that, you know, there's certainly an obvious plan here and they're doing it the right way. That seemed like your post seemed like a pretty sarcastic way of pointing that out. Did I read it right?
I guess. At its core, it was more like, well, I haven't written anything in a while, so I should probably write something. Here's something stupid I thought of. But I think it's more like The local mainstream media has a tendency to start, once they hear a term, they latch onto that term and everything becomes that. So player development in the past few months has been like, you know, a favorite of the local mainstream media. So every single article is like, the Sixers are focused on player development.
Right.
Oh, as opposed to other teams that like don't really give a shit about it. Like,
yes.
We don't want to develop our players. Screw that. So, but like now that the Sixers are bad, instead of being bad, it's player development. And so, you know, I've obviously been a proponent of that for years and years, but now that it's become like more of a thing, everyone's saying it. And that's why I just wrote something ridiculous about it.
My favorite thing about the catchphrase stuff is the misuse of the word analytics and analytical. At least locally, it doesn't seem like a hard, like, isn't somebody who uses an analytics an analyst? I mean, they're not an analytic, are they? That seems like I've heard Sam Hinkie referred to as an analytic. That seems wrong to me. He's an analyst, right? If he is either a proponent of analytics or an analyst, he himself is not an analytic. It's hilarious that it's not like it's a regular word. It's not even like a basketball specific word. It's a word, like an English language word that I feel like we should have the people who write and talk for a living should have a better grasp of what the word analytics means. But I bought a recommended by Zach Lowe book that I haven't started yet about, like, it's a basketball analytics book, a sports analytics book meant for coaches and managers and stuff like that to better understand how to use them. So once I read that, I'll make sure I give you my review. We'll talk about it one day. Being that I can't think of any other, well, you're about to embark on, we should get this in before we touch anything else NBA-wise. I wasn't sure of when your Seattle trip was. But you leave tomorrow. Has there been any update? Now, just to revisit this real quickly in case you didn't listen to last week's podcast, Mike is going to Seattle with a friend of his who knows Spencer Hawes. And,
No.
Your friend isn't going?
Yeah, well, I'm going with a friend, but my roommate knows Spencer Hawes.
Oh, and your roommate's not going?
Yeah, my roommate's not going.
Okay. All right.
So I'm trying to put the pressure on Andrew Sharp, who writes for Grantland. I'm trying to put the pressure on him to text Spencer and be like, hey, you know, your boy's going to be up there. You should meet him. It'd be funny. But Sharp doesn't want to do it because apparently I'm a vocal anti-Hawes guy. But really, I'm not.
Well, you are.
Well, Hawes the basketball player and Hawes the person are just so different for me. I don't want to talk basketball. I just want to hang out with the bro with the mullet and the faux hawk.
In fairness, I understand what you're saying, but imagine this. Imagine if John Mitchell had said, look, I don't have a problem with Mike Levin, the guy. It's Mike Levin, the writer and the tweeter, that I think really sucks. I mean, I think everything about how he writes sucks. I think his tone sucks. I think he's bad at writing. Overall, he's a horrible writer. Horrible. But I'd love to hang out with him. Now, maybe you would understand the irony of that well and want to do it, but I have a hard time imagining that you wouldn't take some sort of offense and say, wait, that guy might not like me.
You make some good points, but I still want to hang out with him. He hasn't responded to. I've tweeted at him twice, so maybe like when I get there tomorrow, I'll send another one, and then just like keep letting him know where I am, so maybe he'll just like stop by. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and if you're listening to this and you want this to happen, which I do. Mostly because, A, I just want an Instagram of it, and then, B, I just want to talk about it on the podcast. That's all. If you're listening to this and you want this to happen, please tweet at SpencerHawes00 that you want him to hang out with Mike Levin. And hanging with Spencer was the hashtag I was using. If you'd like to use that hashtag, because then when this actually happens, you can join in the conversation by using the hashtag hanging with Spencer. That way we can all be on the same page, even if we're not following each other. So, so I would love for that to happen. So,
would I.
Yeah, I'm upset. Well, I think the fact that there hasn't been any real development yet sort of adds to the excitement.
It just makes me want it more.
Yes.
It makes me want it more, yeah.
Absolutely. And then when you come to Philadelphia, I'll make sure that that John Mitchell thing happens.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. That'd be a good one for sure. Are you gonna try to come to a sevens game with us?
Yeah, I'm in. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I'm gonna be in around Christmas for like a week or so, and there's like one sevens game. I think they're playing Springfield on like the 28th or something, 27th, 28th. And that'll be a great time.
It's gonna feel like going to a high school game, right? I mean,
it'd be perfect
in my head, and not like a big time high school game. it's gonna look like summer league, right? With nobody in the stands.
It's gonna be Council Rock versus CB West.
All right. Well, yeah, I look forward to it. I'm in for that. So I'm in for that road trip.
Oh yeah.
Before we go, I do want to make sure that you saw, heard about, and know about the 9/11 thing is tough to do. If I were, my approach to 9/11 on social media is to just not talk about it. Like,
yeah,
that's not what I normally talk about. I remember where I was. We all remember where we were. Like, it was a tough day. I have great stories about it, but none of them great in that interesting, I think, stories about it, that I'll never forget. But like, it's not something that translates very well over social media. It, like, no matter how you use the hashtag, using a hashtag to talk about like maybe one of the worst day in U.S. history is probably like sort of, you know, cheapening it in the first place. Like, hashtag never forget, along with like hashtag things I don't like about girls, like when they're both trending or whatever, you know.
Hashtag laying the pipe for booby.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, my suggestion is that everything you do looks ridiculous. So I'm just going to bail out. It doesn't mean that I don't care. It just means I don't want to look like an asshole. And
yeah.
Given the reaction, I think some people overreacted to some of the stuff yesterday. I wasn't like patently offended by AT&T's like dumb picture tweet, but it was clearly like marketing, and you know, it was sort of dumb and it made them look dumb and they had to apologize for it. So like, what is it worth anyway? But the Lakers tweet, did you see it?
I have not.
Oh, go to Deadspin. I just want to paint to you what the Lakers tweeted, and I want you to imagine this. The Lakers tweeted out hashtag never forget with a picture of Kobe Bryant in the game, just his face like sweating. Like, it looks like the rest of the picture is one of those ones where he's sort of like bent over and holding his shorts. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
holding the front
of
his shorts. A picture of Kobe Bryant with hashtag never forget on it. It was the most hilarious thing. Like, I wasn't offended by it. But all I did was think about, like, well, wait a minute. Like this looks like Kobe Bryant has died. Like, that I'm not supposed to forget Kobe. Like, what does Kobe Bryant have to do with 9/11? Like, he's not from New York. He didn't live in New York. He didn't play for the Knicks. Like, maybe that picture took place on a 9/11 day or something, but it was really, really strange. I'm sad that you didn't see it, and they later deleted it and apologized for it. In case anybody took it the wrong way. I just didn't know what the right way to take a picture of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, what is the right way?
And then if something tragic were to happen to Kobe Bryant, then how do you do it? What do you put a picture of? Because you've already used Never Forget and a picture of Kobe, so you're going to have to use something else. Use a picture of Powell, I guess, when you do it. I'm disappointed you didn't see that. You would agree, right, that there's no proper way to handle that on social
media? There's no real way to handle anything. Like, you just be like, hey, I'm sorry that this happened. But if you're a person that tweets comedy for the most part, or basketball, or something stupid like what we do, then there's just nothing you can say that, you know, makes it better or is insightful at all. It's 12 years. I mean, anything important to be said has been said, and certainly will not be said by idiots like us. So for the,
especially within 140 characters.
Exactly.
With a hashtag. Yeah.
So the best policy is to just shut the fuck up and keep tweeting about Sixers conspiracies, I think.
Yeah, and then the other thing is context. If 99% of what I tweet is either about sports, television, or and is mostly like humorous and sarcastic, like if I tweet about 9/11, that by default is going to look sarcastic. You know what I mean? Like that was the problem with the AT&T thing was that like I bailed from the discussion because I didn't even really want to talk about it. But like the last 100 tweets from AT&T were about like marketing initiatives. So if they tweet about 9/11, chances are it's going to look like it's a marketing initiative. If that's all they do is try to sell phones and phone service, then, you know, tweeting a phone, taking a picture of the World Trade Center certainly looks like an advertisement. But Dennis Rodman went to North Korea to see Kim Jong-un again and said that he's going to return with an all-star team of NBA players. Your prediction, does Dennis Rodman have the pull within the former NBA community to get together a team of former NBA All-Stars to make a goodwill trip to North Korea?
Absolutely not. No shot.
You know
who... You think Larry Johnson's going to come? You think he's going to bring Larry Johnson?
I think the only guy... I think that... Look, Worm, if you're listening... I think the move is you're going to have to go after guys who are broke. So to me, immediately, Scottie Pippen is in. Scottie Pippen is in. Iverson is in, but it's going to be hard to track him down. Getting him to agree to it, I don't think is the problem, but getting him to actually go, as that team in Turkey found out, like that's sort of the problem, is getting him to go. So Pippen, Iverson, I just heard Steve Francis got choked by Steven Jackson in a club. I don't know how Steve Francis's life is going, but you know, I don't know.
Seems
I feel,
good.
What's that?
Seems good so far.
Yeah. And by the way, if Steve Francis and Steven Jackson are in a club somewhere, someone's choking somebody.
Like, somebody's getting choked. That's not
a surprising story. If Steven Jackson's in the club with anybody, I imagine somebody's getting choked. Antoine Walker would probably go to North Korea, right?
Gilbert Arenas.
Would go to North Korea, absolutely. Yeah. Who is the guy, speaking of Gilbert Arenas, the other guy with the gun?
Lamarcus Crittenden.
Yeah, right? Wouldn't he?
Not an all-star. But.
Well, I feel like it's only going to be Pippen, really, that shows up as far as the all-stars. But a team of Pippen and Rodman and a bunch of role players could make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference this year.
So, I could see Karl Malone going and just like not realizing it's a bad place to go.
Yeah. Now you're right. I have the Karl Malone thing in my head, but there's no way he's broke because he's notoriously cheap. But I can imagine him making a stupid decision and going over there. He seems like an asshole, right? I mean, like a bad guy.
I don't know. Maybe just like an ignorant, like just unaware, oblivious person.
Well, you remember he's Demetrius Bell's dad. Do you remember that? Demetrius Bell, former offensive lineman for the Philadelphia Eagles. Terrible, obviously, offensive lineman last year. But he has no contact with him. He is Karl Malone's his dad.
That's just baffling to me.
Oh, you'd never heard that before. Hold on.
I had no idea.
I'm going to make sure I have the right offensive lineman. Demetrius Bell.
Are you sure it wasn't like Hank Fraley?
No. No, yeah, I'm pretty sure. Karl Malone's Shameful Secret by Jemele Hill on ESPN. He has been an atrocious father to Demetrius Bell. Absolutely.
I think, and I've almost, and this is going to take a dark turn, but like...
Is your father also Karl Malone?
Yeah, my father also fathered Demetrius Bell.
Yeah.
It's tough because, like, you hear so many shitty things about athletes.
Yeah.
You hear just, like, how they're bad fathers and bad husbands and et cetera, just, like, bad guys. And it's not all of them.
No.
It's certainly not all of them. But you just hear so many stories about it again and again. And after the Royce White thing happened where, you know, his girlfriend is a former girlfriend or former fiance suing him for, you know, allegedly hitting her.
Which he did deny. Which he did deny through his lawyers, yeah.
Right. And I think, who is it? Was it DeAndre Liggins that dropped a, was it DeAndre Liggins that dropped like an Xbox on his girlfriend's head?
Oh, I don't know. Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, how long does it, like, how long do we keep doing this? Like, where we just follow along these people and, like, root for these people, where they're just, like, most of them are just, like, a, have made it abundantly clear that they're bad guys.
Well, you know what I think? To me, I don't, look, those stories get more clicks than Elton Brand is a notoriously great guy.
Yeah.
Most people who know Iguodala think he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Lou Williams, though very silly, does a lot for the community and appears to be a very good guy. Thaddeus Young also appears to be a very good guy. The number of stories we've heard about these guys being good guys are basically whittled down to Lou Williams and his McDonald's story with the mugger, which is probably a lie anyway. So, or Burger King, whatever it was, like how the guy tried to mug him and Lou Williams.
McDonald's.
Yeah, talked him out of it and then bought him McDonald's, which is
great story.
Obviously a lie. Like, there's no way that happened. So there's no stories. So what happens is that I don't know that there's necessarily, with the NFL, it appears like there's a significant problem there. But the basketball, I don't imagine that there's more bad guys in the NBA than there are in, like, I don't know, accounting or blogging for that matter. But But those stories, sorry, but shots fired.
Coming right in my heart.
Yeah. So, but what I think is, for me, is that I pretty much cheer for these guys or boo them, whatever I decide, regardless. Like, I don't care if they're a good guy. I don't care if they're a bad guy. Doesn't make any difference to me. Look, if you hit your girlfriend, sound like a shitty dude. But, like, it is a, the problem is we don't know everything about everybody, so it is a slippery slope. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, well, if I don't cheer for, you know, I was always a very big DeAndre Liggins fan. And now I heard this Xbox thing and I can't cheer for him. But the problem is that, like, there's so much that I don't know. I don't know about the case. I don't know about his girlfriend. But I don't know about all the other players on the team. Like, Kevin Durant seems like a sweet guy. But, like, I don't know. He might be a dick. Like, he might be an asshole. I don't have any idea. So... So I'd rather just, like, for me, I just forget it. And, you know, I don't tell my kids to act, well, I don't have any kids, but when I do, I'm not going to tell them to act like, you know, a basketball player.
Little Demetrius Bell's running around.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, here's the issue. And why is that? And I it's my argument. So I guess I'm arguing with myself, but why is that okay? But you can look at, You can see the tides of change happening with football concussions. Like, why is rooting for bad guys okay, but watching a sport where you know that there's serious concussion damage and long-lasting brain damage that will happen? Why is that starting to not be okay?
Well, cause
I don't think that's okay either.
Yeah, well, it's because it's all insane hypocrisy and the line about, look, I wrote about this when I hate to take concussions and domestic abuse and compare them to buying the Devils. But when Josh Harris bought the Devils, I wrote something that I wish I had, like, found a better way to write. I'm not, like, entirely happy with.
Been there, bro.
Yeah. Yes. It's not one of my proudest pieces. I don't hate it. It's just, you know, I was trying. You know, sometimes when you're writing, it's interesting. I've never been a writer by trade. I feel like I'm a broadcaster who writes.
And it shows.
Yeah, asshole. But well, no, like me is I'm honest, right? Sometimes I feel like some of my stuff resonates because I'm honest and I happen to find a way to express that well when I write. A lot of times I don't, and that's one of the things, this is one of the things that I wrote that, you know, I don't think I found the right way to express. But my point is that everybody was acting fired up, but it is just, and angry, but it's just one of these things that we will act like is this affront to our affront to our fandom or us as people, but that we will one day forget if the team wins. And the things that I listed among those things are like, look, what Michael, I am a Michael Vick fan, but what he did was awful. And if you decide that you don't want to cheer for him because what he did was awful, that's fine. But like when they win and he's good, you can't cheer for him either. It's one or the other. But like the whole town turned and was Michael Vick fans after what he did was awful. Brett Myers like beat his wife in public. We have numerous cheaters on the Phillies, numerous cheaters. Like, and Phillies fans will shame Ryan Braun and A-Rod and completely forget about the fact that Kevin Franson, J.C. Romero, Carlos Ruiz, like we have like more cheaters on in the Phillies organization than anywhere else, is that you can't pick and choose these things when they're convenient. Either it's either like you have a moral compass about it or you don't have a moral compass about it. And either one is fine to me, but like you just should sort of to me stay true to like, you know, you can't care about the concussions and then say, wow, they're turning it into flag football. Like it's one or the other. Either you don't care or you care. It's one or the right?
Yeah. And I think it's the whole, you know, sports institution is just like a series of moral conflicts.
Right, because you're asked to, because the way we cheer for them, because it's become, and we know so much about them, and that's sort of one of the things, it's interesting, I was talking to Al Morgani one day just about the notion of heroes in sports, and how 25 years ago, and more so even 50 years ago, but like, it was easier to have these heroes, these icons, because we knew so much less about them. And
exactly.
Then if Michael Jordan was around today, it's hard to imagine him as being a hero because he was such a prick and had a gambling problem and drank a lot and like, you know, used homophobic slurs in practice and like all these things. Like when you consider all these things and think about the fact that Peyton Manning, LeBron James and, you know, whoever have survived, you know, this era to still sort of be a global icon and a hero is pretty amazing. But it's hard to have.
You have to almost be perfect.
Yeah.
Not slip up in any way. But I mean, again, it's just like you go back to Charles, like they're not role models. They're just like guys that are athletic.
Right.
Like, they have been gifted this stuff. There's no reason you should trust them to do anything but be their athletic selves and play sports well. And when people read into it too much, that's when it gets tricky. And I don't know, it's still tough, the idea of just rooting actively for people that you don't know, but that you still know at least some of them are bad people.
Yeah, and that's not to say that you shouldn't take it seriously. Like, look, if the guy, if Royce White really did hit his girlfriend, like that's yucky to me. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
It's gross.
But the thing is that like once he gets on the court, you know it. Yeah, we have to realize that we're not cheering for them as people, you know, and it sort of gets back to, and it's a shame that there is so much player movement in all of the sports now, because it used to be a lot more about cheering, it sounds corny, but cheering the name on the front of the jersey and not the name on the back. You cheered for a team. And the reason why it was so easy to continue to like that team is because the same players were there year in and year out. And now I think you end up cheering more, the whole thing is more difficult because the players move around a lot more, and I think it makes it harder to stay committed to one team. I think the NBA is interesting in that, like, you know, there's so much NBA, and I feel like so many of the fans of the NBA are fans of the game that I think people have more favorite teams than ever. And I think football is similar in that the fantasy has become such a big thing that they have more, like, you know, they have less allegiance to home teams and cheer different ways. I don't even know how I got on this, but. Yeah, I don't know. I wish they didn't. It is a very interesting thing to start knowing about these guys as people and the bad things that they do. And then, you know, if Royce White really did this, but it still ends up on the Sixers or whoever it is, just using Royce White as an example, and he hits a three-pointer to win the game, like, you know, what are you supposed to do? You know, how are you supposed to react to that? How are you supposed to feel about that?
Yeah, it's just hypocrisy and sort of like buffet-style morality, I think.
Wow, I like that buffet-style morality.
Yeah, how about that one?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one, bro. Do you have to go or do you have time for more?
Yeah, I got to go. We got to eat today. This is nice.
Okay. Wait, we got what today? We got deep. Yeah. Well, here's to you and your quest to hang out with Spencer Hawes. It would be the
hanging with Spencer.
It would be the best thing I think that's happened in Sixers land, aside from the hiring of Sam Hinkie in years. You know, it basically comes down to Lou Williams' three, Andre's free throws, the day that they acquired Bynum, the Hinkie hire, and you hanging out with Spencer Hawes. That would be the top of the rankings, I think.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's certainly up there. I just a quick second. I had a meeting 2 days ago. Pretty important meeting that I can't talk about yet. But in the meeting, I talked about loaded ballers because the idea is you sell your whole self and that kind of stuff. So it's certainly a part of who I am, even though in my other life I'm not doing sports, I'm doing television writing. And so it was just like I got on the conversation of like we were talking about Spencer Hawes and talking about the Sixers and loaded ballers and stuff. And it's like I can't believe like there's been such like a collision course of just this ridiculous team has just continued following me along just every single path that I ever tried to do. It's like, well, yeah, now I'm basically bound to the Sixers forever.
It's one of those moments where you're like, why is this one of the most important things? Here is a very important meeting, and here I am talking about Spencer Hawes.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, man, I wish this had gone differently. but yeah, I thought that was funny. And,
well, I'm both proud of you and really disappointed in you.
I'll talk about it when I can talk about it.
All right, dude.
Hey.
Well, good luck in whatever that is, and good luck in your hunt for Hawes.
Good luck and good Spencer.
# hanging with Spencer.
See you, buddy.
See
ya.
Like I said, hold your head, son. Don't take a second. Check it out now.